Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 25th, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast in the world. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Boy, I gotta tell you, it's weird having you away and when it's cold here. I'm used to you being here when it's cold.
It's cold there?
It's freezing.
Well, it's freezing everywhere. Let's see, 48 degrees in Las Vegas right now.
Yeah, it's like 49 right now here.
That's wrong. See, I mean, there should be some kind of law against, you know, it should never be 48 in Vegas, right?
Right.
You should always, your face should be melting off of you. You're in Vegas. I mean, I'm no meteorologist, but I just don't really understand this, you know. But it's been pleasantly.
Where's all this global warming I've been hearing about?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, this is Vegas.
Our globe is not warm right now.
I'm wearing a sweater in Vegas. That should be against the law.
I'm wearing pants and a long sleeve shirt in Florida. This is not good.
I didn't even know you own pants. So.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I had to go up into the attic and fetch them out and beat off some moths. Oh, I'm sorry. Beat some moths.
Oh my gosh! That's an in-show Easter egg, folks.
There you go, everybody. That's staying in the show. All right. Well, we can't trust your internet connection, so let's get moving with the real show.
So I'm out here in Vegas for our Ante Up Poker Tour event at the gorgeous Red Rock Casino Resort and Spa. We'll talk about that more in the main event. Our main topic. It was very interesting to me. I was out here, I was watching the inauguration in Las Vegas.
Huh.
You know, on TV.
Yeah, I know.
And I gotta say, I was sitting there watching, and I'm like, I'm in Vegas. It feels like I should have had some prop bets on the inauguration. You know, I should have gone down to the sports book and, over-under on the length of time Beyonce sings the national anthem, or something like that, right?
If it was really her singing.
Well, that's true. At least we know she wasn't going to mangle the words like something.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, so it's kind of surreal here to be. I mean, I know this is part of the United States and people campaign here. I just don't think of politics or government when I'm out here ever. Thinking about gaming and glitzy lights and mud wrestling at Gilly's.
One of the last times I was out there, he was in Vegas and we had to hold up our plane while we watched Air Force One take off. It's pretty wild. Pretty cool.
Interesting.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Well, anyhow, so the inauguration was on my mind, and I saw this story. I believe it was done by Fox News. And there was a bartender at the Willard Hotel. I don't know if you're familiar with the Willard Hotel, but a real famous Washington, D.C. hotel. In fact, actually, the term lobbyist was coined there.
Huh.
Because people would come, the great business of the government was back in like the late 1800s, I believe, was actually conducted in the lobby there. People had drinks and were talking about stuff, and that's how the horse training happened, and so they became lobbyists.
Wow.
See? A little history lesson there for...
Wow. That's all. Good night, folks.
But the bartender there, I don't know if he's the chief bartender, the Grand Poombah bartender, whoever. Some guy that mixes drinks there, right?
Right.
Because his inauguration decided he was going to mix a drink for all of our presidents.
Huh.
And put it on the menu for inauguration weeks. People come in and go, hey, I want the James Polk.
Right.
And he would mix up the James Polk for you, right?
Right.
And so he did some very studious research and tried to come up with a drink that that particular president favored. And if he couldn't find that in history's annals, then he came up with a drink that was popular in the day back then, right?
Cool.
All right, so where we're getting with poker on this is that obviously we've talked about this on the show. We've had a bunch of our presidents have been fans
on the show.
Of the game of poker.
They've been on the show. We had a bunch of our presidents on the show.
Oh, exactly. Absolutely, yeah. You know, we're like the Beverly Hilton. Everybody comes through here. And so at least two of the drinks that this bartender came up with were specifically because of the poker acumen of presidents.
Cool.
Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, sure.
So the first one, well, not the first one, but if you go down reverse chronologically, was Harry Truman, of course. Again, a little known fact, he was playing poker when he found out that Roosevelt died. Okay. And had the great, awesome burden of becoming president. But this guy's drink for him was Maker's Mark in soda. And he said Harry was an aficionado of Kentucky's finest. That's bourbon, too, for folks out there that are like my dear friend.
I knew that.
And he said both he and his wife Bess enjoyed this long drink while playing poker at the White House.
What is Maker's Mark?
That's what I just said. Dork.
Just being funny, man. It's a subtle humor.
Uh-huh.
Little known fact, Bess liked to stitch together flags in her off time. Just a little known fact for you there.
Are you being serious, Clark?
No. Betsy Ross, Bess, Truman. Going for it there, right there, but didn't work out.
Yeah. Because, Bess actually didn't live in the White House very long, too. That's
a real fact.
Real little known fact.
Oh, okay.
Actually, it's not really little known. It's probably widely known. Maker's Mark and soda. Maybe we'll have to mix those up at the next Andy Opone game.
Now, you say that all the time, but you never do.
Yeah, because no one ever asks for it. You guys all come in with your big Powerades and your... and whatever else you crud you guys drink.
I come in with my big mooching ability and take whatever's in your fridge.
All right, well, I'll put some Baker's Mark and soda in the next time. And that's it. So you'll be forced to drink it. And then, of course, from my home state of Ohio, Warren Harding, his drink was 7-7.
Ah.
We used to put about down a lot of those before I realized that I could get something that actually tasted better. But he says, the popular highball among the quote-unquote Ohio gang, especially when served at Speaker Nikki Longworth's poker games.
That's pretty cool.
I always like the term highball, too. It reminds me of my grandmother. She always, when we were in her house, she'd go, ow, can you make me a highball? And I actually grew up thinking that was a drink. So, when I turned 21 and went at the bar, what do you want? I think I'm going to have a highball. And then the bartender looks at you like, okay, what kind of highball? Oh, fuck, I don't know.
The true Scott Long making appearance on the Annie Up Poker Cast.
See what happens when I come to this
Sin
den
City.
Of impurity out here.
Hey, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, buddy.
But sure, anyhow,
not
gosh
really
darn it, I don't know any highballs.
Gosh darn it. I'm going to leave that at the show.
Oh, man. But yeah, so it's a popular highball. But 7-7, I used to drink that. Pretty regularly, actually.
When you were younger, you were, or even now still, you're sort of one of these political, guys. And so is that why you drank 7-7? Because you learned that he drank it, or because it was popular in Ohio, or what was the deal?
Yeah. I was always a big fan of one of the most corrupt presidents in the country. I remember when I was a little kid, I told Mom, I hope I can grow up and enrich myself from the office of the Oval.
Office of the Oval.
But no, I drank 7-7 just because it was, because I've always kind of liked the bourbon scotch kind of thing, so you mix a little 7 in it, and then I became a man, and I'm like, I don't need anything mixed in my booze. Give it to me straight up.
That's right.
Like Andrew Jackson, by the way, who I'm sure did drink his favorite drink while playing poker, but the story didn't mention that, so he didn't make it her show. But now I made her show. Mostly because I'm just kind of rambling as long as I can to... cover up my inadvertent profanity.
Well, some real poker news. NBC has announced its Heads Up field, which we all found out about this week. Gail Bauman is going to be in the field. The mm-hmm. person who was unfortunate in the World Series when it came to that, what I consider a bad beat, and finished 10th in the main event this year. She's going to be in the field, and pretty much all poker players... all real poker players, and then the only quote celebrities were Sam Simon and Gentile, and they both, they both play poker all the time. They're both accomplished players anyway, so
yeah, it's not like the years when they had Emmitt Smith in there and
Don Cheadle. Like Don Cheadle plays a lot, but still, get him out of
not to Sam and Jen's level, but yeah, that's the It's interesting that they've gotten completely away from the celebrity-driven thing on this, right?
Yeah, I mean, usually it's because they want people to watch. Now it seems like they want a real field. So, you know, we'll have to see what that means. You know, I mean, if they don't have, do they have? What I'm wondering is when they brought it back, do they have the sponsorship money? You know, where is that coming from? You know.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. The seating party was last night over at Caesars. Obviously, I was busy over here at Red Rock with our Andy at Poker Tour event, so I didn't get over there to see how the seatings came down and to get a little bit more information on it. But yeah, that'll be the question. I mean, who's paying for it this year?
Yeah.
Might be something that's being paid for by, you know, Caesars Entertainment. Maybe this is a World Series thing. I mean, the only qualifier this year qualified through WSOP.com.
Right.
I would think that if they went out and got some big sponsorship money, there would be a Maker's Mark sponsored player drinking soda. And that didn't happen. So maybe they didn't. Maybe they're going a different route with sponsorships this year. But yeah, I'm curious. I don't know. I really don't know.
I know I'll watch it. I mean, I've sort of faded with watching poker now. Maybe it's because it's not on as much. I don't know. But I've started to just get away from watching it. But, you know, this I know I'll watch. And just for the... It's so intriguing, heads up like that. It's like I would watch chess, I think, on TV if they edited out the massive...
You know what? I think I would, too.
I really do. I think I would. I think I would watch chess because mano a mano is so interesting to me. Whereas, you know, most of the time... You know, 10 players at one table and edited for enjoyment is not really something I want to watch. But I definitely watch this.
I'll bring the chips and the Maker's Mark, and we'll bring Fast too, so you can tell us what the heck's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I you know, I know people think that I hate watching poker on TV, but I do. I really enjoy watching Heads Up, and you know, we'll talk about it later on the show. We had a Heads Up event out here that I was really excited about. It's a very different game, and. And it's fun to watch, you know, two people go at it head-to-head. And really, I think actually I'm going to like it better this year because they got rid of some of those celebrities. And I kind of would have actually liked some more of the amateurs. I kind of like that David versus Goliath thing, you know, one in each bracket.
Yeah.
To kind of, you know, give us little people out there hope, you know. But yeah, I'm going to be excited to watch it and see what... See how good it is. Now, the one thing, though, is, and I was talking to, I had a couple meetings out here this week, and I was talking to one gentleman that mentioned that that was kind of the problem with World Poker Tour when they first launched in terms of publicity for the properties, because they didn't want anybody to know who won. They wanted you to have to watch TV to find out who won the event. Yeah. And, of course, back in those days, that was... You know, back before color was invented and Facebook and Twitter, and so you can kind of keep that secret a little bit. But now it's impossible. So, I mean, I think the last Heads Up one before Black Friday killed it, I actually didn't watch it, I think, because I found out everything about it beforehand. And even though I still enjoyed watching it, I gave up a little bit. But I'll watch it again this year, I think. Assuming we know what channel it's going to be on.
Oh, man. All right,
because it's called NBC Heads Up doesn't mean it's going to be on NBC.
We got a real interesting hotline this week, 813-448-1120. You call that, we use it. We'll give you something cool. This comes from Will in Texas.
I wanted to comment on a story you guys had on the news desk about the kid from Georgetown who had a scholarship and got busted for breaking into a home game. I had a similar situation here, and I wanted to tell you about how it went down a little differently. So I was dealing at a poker game. This is when I was about 19 or 20, had been playing and dealing at home games, underground games here in Texas. Dealing at this game has about 25 people at it, two tables going, plus people there. And four guys bust into the game, two of them with handguns, two of them with assault rifles. And they go about trying to rob the game. They get everybody down, scared, on the floor. So they start pistol-whipping people. A guy who got away from their attention snuck into a restroom and called the cops. Anyways, the cops end up coming. The guys who were robbing the game heard the cop cars coming, so they scram. They made off with a bunch of people's wallets, cash money, in their pockets and watches and stuff like that. And they didn't really understand how a poker game worked. And so they also stole chips on the table, believing that they could do something with them, and didn't go into one of the back rooms where the house was keeping the money. Anyways, the guys end up getting caught, charged in with a deadly assault with a weapon, some sort of charge. They end up all pleading guilty. And since there were so many of us there, they had about 22 counts of armed robbery with a deadly weapon, and end up getting 7 years, I believe, each in prison. But the cops knew that they were breaking into a poker game. The guy who was running the game didn't end up getting charged. The cops actually felt sorry for us, I guess. Knew that it was an illegal game here in Texas. Didn't do anything about charging us. All they cared about was getting the guys who were breaking the breaking up the game and stealing and injuring people.
Yeah, you know, these crazy home games have always scared me, haven't they?
Yeah, at that level, yeah, I think. I mean, and that's another reason why Texas is so strict with their poker, you know, with not having poker, you know, and gambling and whatever, because it just gets out of hand like that. I did like that he mentioned at the end that the you know, the game wasn't prosecuted, because we had mentioned that on our shows. I was saying, you know, oh my god, wouldn't that suck that, you know, this guy gets 50 years or whatever, and then, oh, by the way, we're going to put you in jail for having the game. So that was kind of cool that they didn't give me any crap. Of course, I'd be looking over my shoulder in that home game now. I don't think I'd host it now, because the cops know we're holding it.
Yeah, that's just it. I mean, it's almost like, you know, if you had like a vigilante cop force in your city, that's what you do. You send people in just to rough you up, right?
Yeah.
And they go, hey, you know what? Oh, man, you guys got beat up, and still I feel bad. I'm not going to prosecute you guys. And they're like, okay, thanks. And they're like, all right, we're shutting down the game. And then they're like, you know, over at the Dunkin' Donuts all splitting up the money and saying, aha, we shut down the game and we got their money.
Street
not
justice.
Not that would ever happen anywhere.
I love that in Texas they have street justice.
Street justice. Is that where Steven Seagal is?
Yeah, that's true, huh? He's, but no, I really appreciate that call, and it's good to know that you know, there's people out there who have experienced things that we can only pontificate about.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy.
Well, you know, that's what I mean. It's good that he's okay and that he can tell us about it and keep people in the loop for you know, watch out. Watch out what's going on, man. You know, I watched that movie Killing Them Softly or whatever, and that involves busting up a home game, you know, stealing money and stuff, and it's scary, you know. All you need is one turncoat in your game, man. One turncoat.
Absolutely.
And you can be screwed, so gotta be careful.
So I keep the evil eye on Faso when he's there. Just don't trust him.
And that's why we promote playing in casinos.
Mm-hmm. You know, or with Skittles.
Or with Skittles, exactly. So
no one wants to bust in and steal a bunch of candy.
Taste the rainbow, guy. We don't have any money here.
All right, well, we appreciate you calling in and encourage everybody else to call our hotline at 813-448-1120. Try to keep it to a minute or less.
Yeah.
And if you do, we will send you something wonderful, like our friend in Texas is getting a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Anti-Up logo version. And don't forget to use code Anti-Up for free shipping. It would be awesome, though, if you can combine the tournament dealer button with a radar detector.
Radar detector.
And then you would know when the 5-0 was coming down on your game, right?
Well, that's for speeding.
It'd be like, beep, 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 and they're like, hey, limits are up. No, no, cops are outside. Learn to know the difference.
Oh, jeez. You're crazy. Oh, man. I think you mean a scanner. I don't think you mean a radar detector. Oh, that game is going really fast. Let's pull him over. Cassetta's playing too fast today. He's raising every pot. We gotta pull him over. Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
All right, we got a mailbag today. We don't know who it's from.
it's the guy that wrote Primary Colors, anonymous. You know, everybody knows him.
We're keeping it anonymous today. He says the Kansas Gaming Commission has recently stated charity poker runs and poker tournaments are illegal in Kansas. Their state-run casino will be reaping the rewards indirectly from what the Gaming Commission considers illegal. A non-state regulated charity poker tournament will be held at a local hotel. A VIP party will be held at a hotel near the casino. My issue is with the Gaming Commission telling other city and charities that it's illegal to hold poker tournaments that raise funds. So I guess it's okay to hold a poker tournament in a town as long as there is a casino close by. So the state of Kansas gets its cut too. Well, I know you responded to this. What do you think of this?
Yeah, this is kind of what I responded, is that I think and I don't live in Kansas, and I only follow it from a distance, obviously, so I'm not speaking with absolute certainty on this, but I've seen this in other states, is really, you know, you got a state that's gaming market is maturing. You know, there are places where, you know, you start with little games here, little games there, and then eventually the state wakes up and goes, you know what, we need some cohesive gaming policy in this state. And I think that's what's going on in Kansas, because they just, you know, obviously legalized their first casinos there. And then I think they realized, you know, hey, as we're doing this, we need to look and make sure that things are running the way they should be running in our state. And, you know, as much as we all like charity events, when they're not regulated, there is a possibility of, you know, fraud, or even the players aren't being protected, I guess,
right,
is what I'm
right.
saying. Obviously, for every good-natured soul out there that's running a charity event and getting all the money he or she says is going to charity, there are other folks out there that, unfortunately, are out there for themselves. So I'm going to guess that they probably just said, you know what, we've got real casinos in our state now, so we don't need to have all of these charity events in unlicensed rooms. Let's push them all towards a venue that is licensed and has surveillance, and where players can be protected and the money is handled correctly, and that's kind of the thing. So I understand that our letter writer is upset and thinks that it's a quote-unquote money grab. It could be, I guess. I'm not saying it's not. But I think really it's just, hey, let's clean up what's kind of been this kind of a lax thing and make sure our players are protected. And unfortunately, that's going to mean some events that were well-run and honest are going to suffer. But it's also probably going to stamp out some of the less than honest ones. But, you know, as long as they're still holding charity events, you know, at or near the casino, I mean, folks are still getting their money. So, I don't know. I understand why people were upset, but I think it's not necessarily as nefarious as it might sound. How's that?
I have nothing to add to that. that's exactly what it is, I think.
You need to say, I have no options. That's what the guy at the tournament last night said every time on the big block.
Oh, jeez.
Options, sir? I have no options.
No, but you're right. I think that, you know, when stuff like that comes through, you know, you need to look back at what you're doing and say, okay, well, we didn't know any better back then, or this is all we had, but now there's this sort of regulated option, and whatever, we need to make sure everything is regulated so our patrons, our constituents, whatever, are protected. So I think you're right with your angle.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example here in Florida. Obviously, we have 32 licensed poker rooms here in this state, and people still do charity events outside there, but I think those kind of run technically afoul of the law. So, you know, when folks call us saying, hey, I want to run a charity event, the first thing I always tell them is, find the closest licensed poker room and partner with them. I mean, you're going to get a much more professional event. It's going to have a lot more legitimacy in people's eyes. I mean, actually, if you go to our forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum now, we've got a little thread going on charity poker, and that's one of the things that I think is important is, you know, some folks in there talking about, hey, I'm going to this charity event. I asked the organizer how much money's going to charity and how much is not, and he's like, dude, relax. It's charity, man. And that's not an event you want to play in, is it?
No.
But if it's in a licensed poker room, a poker room manager can't say that. You know, they have to have it all written down. So you know when you sit down how much of the, you know, your buy-in is going to the casino, how much is going to the charity, how much is going to the prize pool, how much of the rebuys, all that. So you know going up front. And obviously there's a little bit more cost involved in doing that, but at least there's no questions. And that's really, it's really for the player's protection is what it is.
I agree.
Okay, great. We got a brand new swag, and an anonymous, you're going to be the first one, but obviously we don't know your name, so it's going to be a little tough. But everybody else, send your mailbag questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we are going to send you a copy of the new ebook, You Called Me With What? by Rick Danford, which is available for just $1.99 on Amazon.com for those of you that don't want to wait to win it. Rick is one of our poker league operators here in Tampa. In fact, actually, when we talked about the Nuts Poker League that got raided completely ridiculously by our state, that's his company. And, you know, the charges are cleared now and everything. But, and I think he's told me he's looking to write something about that. So,
ooh.
Reed, you called me with what first? And then and then wait for the sequel about you raided me with what? But no, we're very happy that that Rick is offering some copies of his book for the show going forward.
Okay, Running Aces Harness Park near Minneapolis has announced the schedule and structures for the Anti-Up Midwest Championship, and the Anti-Up Poker Tour Series running April 11th to the 21st. Thunder Valley Casino Resort in California will be running satellites for that as well through February. More details on all AUPT events can be found at antiuppokertour.com.
You know, I just want to say I'm just curious because I had a little Facebook back and forth with one of our listeners who we were talking about, you know, the tournament that I'm out here for now in Vegas. I didn't mention it was in Vegas. I just assumed people knew. He was like, dude, I'm going to have to come to Florida and play these tournaments. I'm like, well, we're in Vegas right now. Don't go to Florida.
Huh.
So I'm just curious. I mean, I'm hoping people know that this Anti-Up Poker Tour, when we say Running Aces near Minneapolis and Red Rock in Las Vegas and Thunder Valley in Sacramento, that they're actually being held in those locations.
Yeah.
They're not picking up all their equipment and moving to Florida to have these events, right? And, of course, we're not picking up everything and going to the Dominican Republic. It's everything is already at the Hard Rock Punta Cana there, who is accepting bookings for our Anti-Up Poker Tour World Championship event July 28th to August 3rd at that luxurious all-inclusive resort. 14 tournaments with buy-ins as low as $115. With the winner of the $1,100 main event appearing on the cover of Anti-Up magazine. Great all-inclusive room rates for adults and children will make this a great poker vacation or family vacation this year. For more information, go to antiupmagazine.com/world championship, including how you can win your way there at Dover Downs and Thunder Valley Casino Resort. And we got a couple more casinos coming online very soon. And stay tuned to the show for those announcements.
Cool. Walt Strakowski Jr., our 2010 Player of the Year and a single table specialist, it's going to be our pro on our May 20th Anti-Up Poker Cruise out of Miami, which will spotlight Sit and Goes. Rates are guaranteed through March 4th. We're also sailing out of New York City and Tampa this year. Get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs, Seneca, Salamanca, and Naples, Fort Myers, Greyhound Track at antiupcruises.com.
Very excited Walt's joining us. Great, great guy.
Yeah, I always had a lot of fun when we've seen him. And real down-to-earth guy and really good player.
Yeah, and I always remembered him being a sit-and-go specialist, and that's kind of why we thought to ring him up for this cruise. And I was just talking to him yesterday again, and he said the last big series he went to, he had an 80% cash rate in sit-and-goes.
Jeez.
80%.
Oh, man. That's awesome.
I'm definitely not missing his free class. And then finally, Dover Downs Hotel and Casino in Delaware has announced that because of player demand, it will now be running an Anti-Up Poker League every month, starting in March through October. You can win an Anti-Up Poker Cruise and a personalized Anti-Up League Champions jacket. Visit antiupmagazine.com/leagues for all the details, and be sure to ask the manager of your favorite poker room to set up a league in their room. And, you know, out here in Vegas, I was talking to a gentleman yesterday from somewhere in the Midwest, and he was like, yeah, man, I love reading your magazine every month. I'm like, oh, thank you. And he's like, I'm really talking to my manager. I really wanted to do something like this or something with you guys. And he's like, marketing just won't let him do anything. And I'm like, did you guys take a jackpot drop there? He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, oh, here's a jackpot drop. Go tell that manager that they can use the jackpot drop for some of our great promotions and get some free publicity, and that's one way around these marketing folks.
Yeah.
That just don't like to spend money on any of them.
Okay, well, hey, what happened around the world of poker this week from the Anti-Up News Desk?
Rational Group, the parent company of PokerStars, is moving forward with the purchase of the Atlantic Club Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey, pending approval of an interim casino authorization from New Jersey's Gaming Commission.
And I don't know if you'd been paying attention or not, but I learned late last night that Christie there, the governor, is still kind of like, you know, hedging his bets on this and not wanting to sign it. I wonder what will happen if he doesn't sign it and PokerStars owns this casino. Are they going to regret that or not?
That's a good question. I don't think they'll regret it. I mean, obviously, I think... I mean, from an outsider's view, I guess what I'm looking at with this is, I mean, one, this is a way for them to become legitimate in the United States again. And of course, you know, they had they negotiated a great deal with the Department of Justice, so they are essentially legitimate. But now having a base of operations in the United States, I think that's the biggest thing for them. I think the fact that they might be able to run online obviously is very important to them, but I don't think it's mission critical here. But you know, I could be wrong. But you know, again, they're getting it for, I think it was like something like $50 million or something ridiculously small like that. So, you know, they could probably afford to buy it, run it, do it very well, and wait it out until it turns into something bigger.
Okay, a state representative in Mississippi has reintroduced an online poker bill in that state that never made it out of committee last year. Representative Bobby Moak is hoping the bill will make it out of committee to the full floor this year. I'm hoping it's Moak, not Moak.
Moak.
What do you think? Do you think this has a chance?
It didn't sound like it had even a prayer last year, so I don't know, but I think we're starting to see, this is what we're going to start to see now, right? Because it doesn't look very good on the federal level, so, you know, all these state reps are like, you know what, now it's time for us to push it through, and then you have more of a compelling argument to your fellow legislators, right?
Yeah.
You know, hey, federal's not going to do anything, so this is our time to get in here and make our money off this, so... I don't know whether this one actually has a chance, but I think some other ones that eventually we introduce will have a chance.
Yeah, I that's pretty much a sentiment I shared last night on Fifth Street Radio when I was subbing for your...
That's right, you're going to pinch hitting gig.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about that, and you know, I really do think that the state thing is what's going to push the federal thing eventually, so I hope that happens, and I hope this is getting taken seriously in Mississippi and gets out of the committee, so...
All right, and finally, a bill is moving through the Montana legislature that raised the pot limit of poker games from 300 to 800 and to allow daily poker tournaments as well.
Nice.
I always like these crazy state laws, right? I mean, it kind of reminds me of Florida when we had the $100 buy-in limit. I mean, pot limit, they're weird limits, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, how do they settle on 800, you know? It's just such a weird number. Okay, it's 300 now, let's make it 800. Okay, it's like they put a bunch of balls in a drum and they pull one out and it says 800. All right, that's the limit.
But you know what's funny about this too? It's nonsensical in the sense that really the reason you would have a limit, I would think, maybe I'm wrong, maybe there's a different line of thinking in Montana, is to limit the risk of a player, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why Florida said, oh, we're not going to let you buy in for $100. Well, but then you can buy in for $100 all day long. But here, I mean, you could have two people in a pot that both put $400 in it, right?
Right.
Or you could have 10 people in the pot that only put $80 in.
Right.
So it doesn't make any sense to me.
I know. It doesn't make... When has legislature made sense to you? Ever, especially regarding gaming and poker. God.
Oh, man.
All right, well, you know what? We get to finish up on O'Malley's move today. Let's refresh our memory with part one, and we'll be right back.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are sitting at a 2-5 no-limit hold'em cash game. The table is full of a lot of young, aggressive players who know the game well, and it shows in their play. The standard raise has been to 3x big blind all night. We look down at the ace of clubs, king of clubs, in the under-the-gun position. Oh, great. But there are some things we have going for us. We're at about hour two of the session, and at the 1 hour mark, we made a great read for all of our chips and doubled up. We also won a few more pots, and we now sit with 1,300. Our play and image has made some opponents fear us, even with our average stack. We've been able to raise and take it a few times pre-flop. However, we sense our opponents are getting frustrated with our aggression pre-flop, and we may have gotten somewhat of a target on our back. With a suited ace-king, we're going to raise it up. But since it's from the under the gun, with eight players to act behind us, we're going to make them pay. We raise it 5x to $25. Perhaps this is a mistake. I guess we'll find out. It's folded around to the MP, who takes a bit of time before putting in a call. He's a young, aggressive player, but solid. He's got about 900. It then gets folded around to the button, who also calls. He's a bit older, and has had to rebuy twice. However, neither time was because of poor play on his part. Both were suckouts. He's a solid player, too. What are we doing at this table? He's got about 1,200. The blinds fold, and the flop comes the ace of spades, 9 of diamonds, 4 of diamonds. Now, while we don't like the diamonds, we couldn't ask for much more than top-top. We've got to lead out at this. With $75 in the pot, max rake achieved already, we lead out for $55. The MP thinks for quite a while before putting in a call, and the button calls relatively quickly. Yikes. The turn is the 10 of clubs, somewhat meaningless, and we're put to our first decision. Are we putting in another bet with 2 to act behind us? With 240 in the pot and now less than 1200 in front of us, nah. We're going to exercise some pot control. We check. The MP thinks for a time before counting out 100 and putting that into the pot. What's this about? What's worse, the button calls. We might be in a bind here. But with 440 in the pot and only needing another 100 to call, what can we do? We put in the call, and the 10 of spades comes off on the river. That's bad, right? We check, and the MP carefully puts 250 into the pot. The button instamucks, and now we've got a decision. If we call and win, we've had a great session. Call and lose, we dip down to about 800, which is still a profit. However, if we fold, we still have more than double our original buy-in. Is there a case for raising? But this is where you come in. What are we going to do?
Well, everybody knows I play 2-5 no limit every single day, right? So,
yep.
This is a very easy decision for me.
It's becoming a problem. We're thinking about having an intervention. Laura's called me a couple of times.
All right, from my view from the cheap seats here, obviously any 10 has his beat. I can't imagine too many hands with the 10, except for the 10 of diamonds sticking around on our continuation bet there. I think our turn check could have made any player with a lesser ace feel more confident than they should be. So I guess I'm just going to call. I certainly don't want to reopen the betting. The player has taken the lead in the last few streets. But I think I'm going to call here. I'm not going to fold.
Well, I looked at this and I thought, okay, it's clearly a call or fold, right? I mean, it's not a raise. Yeah. You don't want to open up betting, like you said. So, to me, this really feels like a bet that wants a call. You know, it's large enough, but not more than half the pot. If you're bluffing or if we had him beat, would he really bet less than half the pot? To me, probably not. Unless he's a genius and he really thinks we're going to think that way. I mean, I don't know. But I say he probably has a boat, and I would fold because all we have is a bluff catcher, and this isn't a typical bluff bet in my mind. I feel like he really wants our money, so I'm going to let it go.
Well, I would hope any of our opponents at the table want our money. Otherwise, it's not very competitive, right?
That's true.
Oh, hey, I won the pot. Here we go. Take the money back. I just want to win.
Yeah, it's just the thrill of winning, not the thrill of cashing the money. All right, well, let's hear part two.
Hello again. We took our time with this one. There's a lot of money at stake, but then again, we really haven't put all that much into it. Only about 180, which in comparison to our stack isn't so bad. What could our opponent have? Does a flop set make sense? Trapping on the flop and then value betting the turn and river? Could it be maybe ace-10? Or maybe it's a missed flush or something similar to that. Let's look at his actions as a whole. He just called preflop, took his time before calling the flop, bet $100 into a 240 pot on the turn, and then just barely bet over half pot on the river? I don't know about you, but the hairs on the back of my neck are standing up. This guy's bets make it seem like he really wants us to call. And in poker, we've always got to do the exact opposite of what our opponents want. We fix our eyes on him before throwing our cards into the muck. He lets out a subtle sigh and furrows his brow. He did want to call. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying it's just as important to pick up tells once a hand is over. Otherwise, you can drive yourself mad wondering, and that can harm your game. I hope to see you on the felt.
It's kind of a trend, I think, right? The last O'Malley's move we had here, our opponent set a decent price for us, right? That ensnared the less sophisticated players like me. So again, I'm glad to see that O'Malley escaped the trap, or at least apparently did.
Yeah. Well, if what the guy conveyed after that fold was that he did really want to call, then I'm glad I sniffed it out, apparently. Makes me feel good, but it really did just feel like, please call me, you bet, you know? And I just had to let it go, even though we only had a bluff catcher there, so.
But I will tell you this, though. I mean, we're getting ready to talk to the main topic about the tournaments, though, but there was a hand where... it was about a $1,200 pot, I think, and I bet 100 on a complete bluff and took it down. And I think it's that same thinking. You know, I was channeling this O'Malley's move during that. And I'm like, you know what? This is probably stupid, but I can't win unless I bet. I don't want to commit a lot of chips here because I have, I had nothing, not even a pair, right?
Right.
So maybe I'll put 100 in. Maybe it'll confuse the person. At the worst, it only cost me another 100. And at best, maybe it looks so ridiculously fishy that he'll fold. And that's exactly what happened. It was amazing. I'm like, all right, maybe I'll try this more often. Now everybody's going to raise me on that.
I think you were bluffing with the best hand.
I probably could have been.
I can already see what the other person had, and I know you were better than
But, you know, it's that small bet thing that, I mean, that's what you brought up, and I think a lot of people are going to say that, too. You know, this is a bet that people want to call, and apparently he did by, you know, our comments from O'Malley. So,
yeah.
But, and I will say, it's kind of a ridiculously dangerous bet to make when you don't want to call, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess if you make, you know, for 100 units there, if I make that bet... Again, it's just like limit, right? I make that bet 10 times, and it only has to work once. And now, I've got 11 more times I can try it before I'm caught up. I actually really like it. I mean, I'm being serious now. I kind of like that bet now. I'm gonna try to use that more often. Of course, not in the home game now, because you guys all
know.
Yeah,
we'll all pay attention now. So, well, okay, well, you mentioned the main topic. You are out in Vegas. How are things going?
Oh, it's been great. Here's one of the first things I wanted to say is... You remember back when the first time we came to Vegas when our magazine was out here?
Right.
And we picked the magazine up and we looked at each other and like, gosh, can you believe that we're picking up Annie up in Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Because we had absolutely no thoughts of that when we started the magazine. Right,
no, absolutely.
And it was just a thrill. Now I'm out here and we've got our own tour out here.
Yeah.
In Las Vegas. And I'm just like, you know, again, it's one of these pinch me kind of surreal things. So, I didn't mean to start to show up on a little sappy note there, but that's been kind of cool for me. And a bunch of people coming up and talking to me about how much they enjoy the magazine. A couple of people talking about how much they appreciated the series. You know, we had this Heads Up event last night, which we'll talk about later. And two of those people said, you know what, we wouldn't have been in the casino had they not had a Heads Up event. And we've dropped a lot of money at the blackjack table, so you be sure to let them know that because of this tournament, we were here. So that kind of stuff's kind of cool. Now, before I came out here, I went out to California, did a little business. After I leave here, I'm going to New Mexico. And certainly when I'm out here, not that I have a lot of time, but I am trying to get around the town and see some stuff. We'll put all that kind of stuff on, including some hilarious stories, I hope. But this week, it's all about the Red Rock Anti-Up Magazine Poker Challenge. Anti-Up Poker Tour event out here at the beautiful Red Rock Casino Resort and Spa in Las Vegas, where I'm calling from now. Gorgeous rooms here, by the way.
Yes.
You know, this is one of those properties that I think people are beginning to realize is here. Obviously, I mean, it's doing very well. When I got in here Sunday, the entire resort was sold out. I got in late, and I had to take a smoking room for the first night. Brutal. Mm. Because the whole resort is sold out. That's great. You know, that's exactly what you want. So... But it's an actually gorgeous property out here, and it's right by the Red Rock Mountains, and you know, I checked in. I'm like, I don't care where you put me. I want a view of those mountains. I don't want to see the Strip. I've seen the Strip years. So every morning I wake up and I see these beautiful mountains here. So it's a great resort. Beautiful rooms. Great bar service, apparently. Hop and poker room too. And then the tournament's been a lot of fun so far. So we'll start about that. It was just about a month ago they got clearance to hold the entire tournament in Cherry, their nightclub here. And it's a nightclub that I don't know if they're getting ready to rebrand it or whatever, but it hasn't been in use for a while. And initially, when we booked this, we were talking to the great folks out here at Red Rock. They were going to run this tournament out of the poker room, and then add a couple tables right outside the room in a bar called Rock's Lounge. Mm-hmm. But about a month ago, they realized they could move everything into this nightclub, and it's really cool. It's not too far from the poker room, so it's a short walk there, but the entire event is contained in one place. And I think I sent you a picture of the entranceway. You really kind of feel like you're a rock star walking into this thing. And then they have 14 tables on a couple different levels. Again, it's like a big circular nightclub, so you can imagine that, with a big bar in the middle where they do all the registration. And it's a real nice venue. They had to bring in a lot of extra lighting because remember it's a nightclub, so right. Nightclubs aren't known for their lighting.
Right.
But I've sat at almost every table and the lighting's been terrific, and it's been a great venue, and it's going to open up some possibilities to them next year too. I mean, they started the series on a Monday, which is always a little tough to do, but you know, when they were in Rocks had a big event on Saturday, so they couldn't start it there because they wouldn't have the tables. But you know, assuming they have this venue again next year, then they'll be able to start on a Saturday days and get some big numbers in for the first day. So really kind of cool. And my favorite part of Cherry is that, you know, again, it's a nightclub, and you know me, I always be clubbing when I'm in Vegas. And so they have restrooms, obviously, right in the club, which is great for poker players too. I mean, you can actually make it back, and though I'm missing a hand, this one girl that was in a tournament next to me at the final table, she kept asking when the next break was, and the guy was like, 37 minutes. She's like, but I gotta pee right now. But she was able to run there and get back and only miss one hand, so that's great for poker,
yeah,
you know,
because, yeah.
You know, the World Series, you know, you got to go take a little tinkle during a hand. You could miss like a level by the time you get to the bathroom and back there. So it's a nightclub, right? So everything's got to be hip and stuff, you know. And so you walk in the bathroom. The bathrooms are in the same room, and it took me like 2 minutes. I had to scan to make sure I was going in the right one, because you had like an M and a W, but they kind of looked as similar because they're the same, but they just flipped it, you know.
Yeah.
But you know me, I'm always nightclubbing, but seriously, I've never been to a nightclub. But I've heard about these restrooms where you can actually, the men can see the women, the women can see the men.
Oh, but it's like frosted or something?
No, not really. So, like, when you walk in, you can see straight into the women's room, or the women can see straight into the men's room. And then I'm sounding like Grandpa now. The commodes, they have glass, not like they're not private at all. I guess that's just so you can check out what's going on and see who you want to see, and then you get out of the restroom and go, "Hey, I saw you in there. Want to dance?" But you know, I'm making fun of this, but I mean, I'm sure it's a nightclub. That's what people kind of like, right? But it's funny that you have a bunch of these poker players, and during the week it's a lot of the locals, right? So there's a lot of us older people that you're playing,
yeah.
And to see them walk in and walk out of this bathroom has been worth the price of admission. Well, I think I just peed in some lips because the toilets are shaped like lips. Gosh darn it, this is the craziest bathroom I've ever seen.
Oh, my God.
And that's just me saying it. But anyhow, no, it's a great venue. It's perfect for a poker tournament, and I'm really looking forward to coming back next year, and now that they've had one under the belt in this room, and really do something great. But so a couple little nuggets here before we talk about the tournaments. I've been a little tournament hound out here trying to play as many as I can. The first day of the ante, we were in the level two, and you know, and I'll tell you, this is one of my weaknesses as a poker player. I don't really study structures as much as other people do, and certainly I should.
Right.
Hey, I'm in town. I'm going to play a tournament. So we came to level two, and they're like, all right, it's 5,100 with a quarter ante. And I'm like, an ante? It's level two. And I think I texted you. I'm like, Chris, you're going to have an aneurysm. So yeah, so all the events in, Andy starting on level two, and of course, you know, I'm sitting there, and I got my Andy up gear on, and people are looking at me like, well, you know, it is the Andy up tournament. I got that like about seven times. Jeez. You know, it was funny the first time. But to the credit, the great tournament director here, Derek Glover, listened to the players, and you know, he was telling me, he's like, you know, hey, I added a bunch of levels to our normal structure. I didn't think adding the antis that early was going to be a big deal. People didn't like it. So, you know what? We're going to change it. So they pushed the antis back to level four on day two for the rest of the tournament. And I think that's been a welcome change. But, you know, again, it's one of these things. And, you know, I've been talking to a lot of poker room managers on this trip. And we get this all the time, is that there's not a lot of players that are real sophisticated on understanding structures. For the most part, most players, they just want lots of chips, right?
Right.
Hey, we're always starting with 5,000. How come we can't start with 50,000? Well, you can start with 50,000 in chips, and they could make the levels double every time, and antis start in level one, and the tournament's still going to end at the same time. You know, so it has nothing to do with chips. It's chips, it's structure, it's a length of... All this stuff is a big calculation. And you know, so you know, he was like, you know what? Hey, I thought I was giving him more play by adding some levels in here, and threw a couple antis in to speed it up a little bit. And you know, hey, I'm wrong, so changed it. So I always like when our properties are listening to players.
Yeah, very good. I mean, I went on my anti rant at the Fifth Street Radio last night too, and he was real intrigued by what I had to say. And of course, I brought up Anthony Chester, the manager at Lumiere Place and River City. So how he's doing three blinds now instead of antes when they have to kick in, and I love that idea. And you're right, I love it when managers are being innovative and thinking of what to do when players rebel or are unhappy, and that's what's going on with Derek. That's great. I'm glad that he made the change.
Absolutely. And also got to meet and chat with Rob Solomon. He's our new Las Vegas ambassador, doing a great job for us. He also, his main gig is working for allvegaspoker.com, covering the scene out here. And it was interesting, I was in California, obviously, before I came out here, and I was talking to Dave Palmer, ambassador out there, and he's like, yeah, I think Rob lives up in the valley. I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah. So I get out to Vegas and catch up with Rob. He's like, yeah, I live in California. I come to Vegas 2 weeks a month.
Wow.
For this gig. And he's like, you know what? I don't really need to. I mean, because of, you know, we got phones and emails and things like that, so I can do what I'm doing anywhere, really. But he's like, you know, you'll learn a lot more when you're actually in the room playing and talking to managers. And I totally agree. I mean, that's why I'm on the road so much. But that's kind of, I'm like, wow, you come here every like 2 weeks? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, where do you stay? He's like, oh, sometimes I stay here or there. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot of time on the road.
Yeah. Yeah.
But very dedicated. Really like it a lot. Nice guy. And I promised him dinner, and then I ended up being in a tournament that went late, so I squeezed in fast food with him for 20 minutes in between two tournaments. But he came back last night and played. So, great guy. It's always nice to see our ambassadors, finally. One of the funny things, and I'll talk about this a little bit in the tournament, but that I don't think people really realize, but every one of these events is Annie up Player of the Year points qualifying, right?
Right.
Smaller field, smaller buy-in, so, you know, probably not a big deal right now unless, you know, you're traveling around the country. I mean, these little tournaments will add up for you. but when word gets out about that, they get all excited that their name's going to be, obviously, in the magazine, on the website. And so this guy come up to me that finished fourth in one of the tournaments, and he's like, hey, you're Scott from Andy Up, right? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, this is awesome, man. I just finished fourth over there. How soon will these results be on cardplayer.com?
Oh, jeez.
And I looked up and I'm like, you know what? I don't have any control over cardplayer.com. And I'm like thumping my chest for the Andy Up logo is. I'm like, you know what? We're sending them to Hendon Mob. We're putting them up on our site. If somebody at CardPlayer wants to pick them up, they can. But I can't promise you that they're ever going to be on cardplayer.com. You might want to ask them. Okay, cool. I will do that. Thanks. And ran out of Terry to celebrate his fourth place victory. And then I turn to the people at the table and I'm like, did that just happen? So the rest of the tournament, three were like, oh man, I can't wait to see my name on cardplayer.com.
That's pretty funny.
But somebody mentioned to me that, you know, hey, if it's on Hendon Mob, they usually Bluff Magazine picks up, and Bluff actually listed our events on their website. This guy said I did check it out, and I know Hendon Mob, it works in conjunction with CardPlayer too, so it's quite possible that these will end up on CardPlayer.com. It just seemed a random question.
That'd be something. CardPlayer Player of the Year points for playing in our tour.
You know, I think I told you at the top of the main topic, a lot of people are coming up to me saying that they love reading the magazine and really appreciate the focus we put on the quote-unquote little people. Yeah. Although none of them say that. None of them say they're little people. But I was talking to a guy during the Heads Up tournament yesterday, and he's like, you know, hey, man, I'm a grinder. That's what I do. I mean, I made $300,000 in cash this last year, but I can still consider myself a grinder. And, you know, I don't think I'm ever going to see myself in these other magazines, and my hope is I'm going to see myself in your magazine sometime. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it makes you feel good.
You know, they're doing three events a day. We'll talk about that a little bit more. Our main event starts Friday. That's going to be the big one. Looking forward to that. They're doing four flights, two on Friday, two on Saturday, which is really interesting. And also, they're allowing you to re-enter even if you advance and you know, take your bigger stack on. So that's kind of cool, too. I'm really looking forward to seeing how many people we get out here. I also mentioned cash games have been super busy. Poker room's been packed. You know, I got to town. I was talking to the poker room manager. He's like, oh, yeah, we always have a 4-8 half kill going. I'm like, all right, that's where you're going to see me. He's like, we also have a 6-12 half kill limit going. I'm like, whoa, back up. That sounds like a great game. He's like, oh, yeah, you'll love it. I'm like, great. So I got knocked out of a tournament a couple nights ago. Went over to the poker room. They had the 6-12 going. No list, and I'm like, awesome. Well, I'm a little hungry. I'm gonna go over and get a burger, and then I'll come back. Whenever I got a burger, came back, 10 people on the list.
Jeez.
So I have not yet played a hand of cash since I've been in Las Vegas.
That's good for us, though. It means that the poker room is packed. You know.
But yeah, no, it's great. I mean, that's always the thing. I mean, these tournaments, I mean, you make enough money off the tournament to make it worth your while, but really it's the cash games where you cash in on. And it's good to see that people come out and play as much as they are here. Okay, well, I played in, six tournaments? Is that my count here?
Man.
Six of the first nine. And and I am happy to say I am at a 50% cash rate, Chris.
How's that possible?
I know. It's it's mind-boggling.
So you cash in four and a, three and a half, two and a half? What is it? How many did you play?
No, I've only played six.
Oh, you played six. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So you cash in three, man. You're going to be Annual Player of the Year. We're not going to call you the Short Stack Ninja anymore. We're going to call you the Short Field Ninja because some of these fields are smaller.
Yes. Admittedly, it's not as impressive as it sounds. And I was trying to tell my wife that, and then hopefully I'll remember a story when I get to this other tournament where she was cracking me up about that. But so, you know, one of the things I really liked about the tournament schedule here is that they put a couple of these $40 tournaments on the schedule. I mean, I don't know how many major tournament series have a $40 buy-in tournament. I mean, I guess some managers just might think that's, you know, not big enough for a tournament series, but, you know, this is a locals casino out here. They get a lot of their business from folks that live around here. And, you know, Derek was telling me, you know, hey, you know, we really wanted to have some events on the schedule that everybody could play in. You know, if you can't afford a $40 buy-in, then, you know, there's nothing much else we could do for you, right?
Yeah.
And they had two of those on them, and I played both of them, and they're fun. And a $10 rebuys. Now, when I tell you it's a $40 buy-in with $10 unlimited rebuys for the first hour, what comes to mind?
People just shoving and taking 10 bucks out and paying with a Hamilton every couple minutes?
Exactly. I was thinking there was going to be a table full of Daniel Negreanu's there with just a big stacks of Hamiltons. And all in. Yep. Give me more chips. Rebuy. It didn't work that way.
Really?
These people really played this thing like a freeze out. I mean, I think we average a little bit more than one rebuy per entrant in the two that I played. And they were people that got up and left after their initial 40 and said, see ya. And I'm like, really?
Wow.
It's $10 to get in, go straight to the prize pool, no Jews, no extra deal around on anything. You can't take another shot for $10,000? I mean, $10? So, yeah, and I'm not judging anyone if that's what they want to do. Again, I mean, $40 was a big deal to them. But I really expected it was going to be this frenzy, and it wasn't. Yeah, that being said, I didn't rebuy on either one of them either. But then again, I'm a skilled player, so I didn't either. all right, but so this first one, I took fifth in that. I got my money back on a bubble save, so it was kind of a cheap fifth.
Okay.
They were paying four, but they're like, hey, let's pay the bubble boy back. I'm like, great. And then I'm all in. Good, you're out. $50, thank you. But what I thought was funny is at my first table, there was a gentleman. He was in the 10 seat, and he'd rebought twice, I think. So he's one of the people, you know, doing the Daniel Grano style, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Very last hand of and a level four when this is the last time you could rebuy. You can rebuy through the end of the break. He goes bust on the last hand, right? Stands up, and he's like, yeah, I think I'm done, folks. Starts to walk away, and then someone says, hey, it's only more $10 or 20. You could buy up to 30, I think, at that time when you're bust. You could use three buys at once. And he thinks about it, sits down, and pulls out a Jackson, and gets 2,000 more in chips. And then I get moved to another table, right? I get to the final table. Guess who has all the chips?
No way.
And I think he ended up finishing second. I think he ended up losing the tournament. But he had a massive stack. And I'm like, you know what? This is why you don't get up from a rebuy tournament.
Yeah, especially when that affordable.
Oh, yeah, because anything can happen.
Yeah.
So I was happy to see him, you know, I love those stories where, you know, hey, this is a guy that was walking out to the buffet and then, you know what, I'll put $20 in. And he ended up winning 500 or something out of this thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I got moved to that second table, we went six hands in a row with a bust out.
Jeez.
And because we're balancing tables, they would, you know, if somebody get busted out, they'd be like, all right, hold on, hold up, I need to bring your player from the air table. So they bring a player over. Bust that person out. Okay, hold up. I need to bring your player over. Bring that player over. Boop, gone. All right. So we were calling it the must move table. That was a blast. But yeah, those little things are great. I mean, I'm certainly going to encourage some other people to do these 40-hour, 10-hour rebuys and hopefully encourage people to do the 10-hour rebuys and make it a little bit more fun. But yeah, they're fun little events. So then at night they have a $100 tournament every night. So I jumped in that event three. That one was uneventful. I got it all in with ace king on an ace high board. Guy had ace queen and turned to queen. Boom, gone. So it's great that I could finish fifth for my money back in the $40 tournament and get eliminated early in the $100. That's the way I roll, right? So the next day I did the $40 again. We did a chop, I think, four ways. Five ways, I'm sorry. Five-way chop. But it was interesting discussion. The guy that was a chip leader, and again, these tournaments, at that point, it becomes bingo anyhow, right? So it's really just shoving in and whose cards hold up. So it does make sense to chop there. But the guy, the chip leader, is like, I'm fine doing an even chop. I just want to win this thing. I want to be able to show my son my name and Annie up. That was awesome.
Cool.
And then the girl next to me, it was only her second tournament, she said. I think she was lying later because I heard her later on talking to somebody. She was playing really well. But she's like, you know what? How soon are these going to be up? I've always wanted to Google myself. I never could. So that kind of stuff was kind of cool that, you know, these little tiny – it's a $40 tournament and people were excited about, you know, showing their son that they won or are they Googling their name. You know, so even though it's a $40 tournament, it means something to people.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons we started it, was to get, you know, a tournament like that for the everyday player, and just like we did with the magazine. So that's great. I'm glad people are embracing it like that and really being excited.
all right, so then I get down, done with that, and I had about a half an hour left. I was kind of hungry, I wanted to get some dinner. You know our good friend Steve Calmy, he comes to all of our meetups out here in Vegas. He showed up right before before we did the chop in our tournament. I'm like, hey, Steve, how's it going? He's like, great. He came out just for the event. You know, he's the guy that mostly plays home games, doesn't get out very much unless
right.
we come to town.
Right.
And then I'm like, hey, you playing the 100? And he's like, yeah. So I'm like, all right, well, good luck in that. I'm going to go get some dinner, and I'll catch up with you afterwards. And he's like, all right. So as I was walking out, for whatever reason, this tournament didn't draw well. They only had seven people at the time, I think. So there's going to be a sit and go. A couple more people sat down. It was like nine. So I'm walking out. I'm like, is this going to be a sit and go? It's not going to last that long, right?
Yeah.
So I peeled off 100, sat down right next to Steve, and bad decision. It was nice to talk to him for a little bit for the 10, 15 minutes I was in the tournament. I got knocked out, and then I went to get my burger, and then came back, and Steve was heads up with another player, and they went forever on heads up. It was a real good heads up match to watch, but he finished second in it, so score one for the NEF Nation.
Awesome.
And our good friend Matt Moody from the show Facebook me last night that he's in town. He's going to be playing some satellites tonight. So we got some podcast listeners out here, which is kind of cool.
Great.
And then yesterday was the event I was looking forward to, the Heads Up. You know, a lot of these rooms don't do Heads Up tournaments because they're, you know, such a pain to do, right? So I was very excited they did one. They were going to max it out 32 players. I got up early on Monday morning, 10 a.m. I was first in line when they opened registration for all the tournaments. And bought in. I was first one in because I thought this thing was going to sell out quickly. Unfortunately, they ended up only selling 25 of the 32 seats, which I thought was really odd because there's a lot of buzz in the room. A lot of people really wanted to play this thing. So, of course, you draw seats. I got to buy.
Jeez.
I was 1-0 without even having to turn the card. And, of course, lost in the second round. I had a real good player. That was one of the guys that said, you know, hey, we're here just for this tournament. He actually lives in the D.C. area, so we get to talk about, you know, Charlestown. And, again, very excited about all the Maryland casinos opening up soon. And real good player. He just kept pipping me on small pots. And then I had a hand where I had Jack and nine of spades. Flop came Jack high with two spades.
Jeez.
And, which is a monster, right, heads up, right? And I just played it passively, which is kind of how I was playing the whole time. I got him to pay me off on a couple hands before by just playing passively and make it think like I didn't have anything. And I got too smart for my own good there. And he caught a third four on the river with a 7-4.
Oof.
Took a huge pot off me. And then after that, I got all in with the best hand. And he caught up to me and boom, gone.
But, you can say suck out. I understand it's Annie, a Poker Tour event, but he sucked out on you.
But it's heads up. I mean, everybody's sucking out, reverse sucking out and stuff. But I was kind of bummed because, you know, you don't get very many opportunities to play heads up.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to play a little longer. But great event. I really appreciate the fact that they offered it. And then the last one I played so far, obviously got a couple more days here. But last night I played the 100 again. Got knocked out of the heads up around 5:05. So I had about an hour left to go. Jumped in there, and Kirk Fowler, you know, a good friend that does all of our TV with us, he had texted me earlier, hey, my mom's going to be out in Vegas, and she's going to play the 6 o'clock tonight, and I'm like, all right. So I see her walk in, and she sits down at my table, which is kind of cool. As we make it to the final table, and Chris, I got to tell you, I've never had more fun at a final table than I've ever had at this one. We had this semi-drunk character next to me that was just keeping us laughing. A bunch of other people feeding into him. I mean, it was a big party. It was like a home game.
Wow.
And, you know, he was he had one of these little he was in the Special Forces, so he had one of these little Special Forces card protectors, right?
Yeah.
And at least 10 times he would flip it up in the air and it would land, and that's how he would decide whether to call a big all-in or not. And so at the final table, I had, like, ace-jack, and I shoved, and he's like, so do you want me to flip, or do you just want me to make a decision? I'm like, I don't know, dude. And he's like, oh, I'm going to sit here all day until you make a decision. I'm like, all right, flip for it. So he flips it for it, and he's like, ah, you're lucky. And I'm like, yeah, sure I am. And he shows me 10-4, and he folds. But he was absolutely hilarious. People just were having a great time at it. And then we ended up doing a three-way chop at the end. So I took second in that based on chip count. But yeah, so I have a second, a third, and a fifth all in terrifically large fields of no more than 25 players.
Man, you're crushing it.
And that was $500 last night.
Wow.
So it almost got me unstuck on tournaments all for January 13th. For the folks out there, I am keeping my New Year's resolution so far.
Very good.
It's January 24th, and I'm keeping my log. So as depressing as it is.
Well, I resolve to do the hand of the week with you. So
excellent. Let's move right on.
Let's move on to the hand of the week. So remember every page you tell the story.
This is Joe Navarro, and you're listening to the best poker cast in all the universe, Ante Up, the absolute best on poker.
Comes from, his email says Brian, but the end of it says Fisk. So we'll call him Fisk. That's a cooler name, right?
Okay.
And it's a situation. He says it's a $1,000 buy-in, three-day tournament. 220 players started. So again, we're actually the best people to ask about this, right?
Yes.
It's middle of day two. 30 players left. Four tables, so seven at two of them and eight at the other two. 27th place, which is the min cash, is 2,300. First place is 48,000. A little higher than what I got yesterday.
Yeah, slightly.
Our hero has 44,000 in chips, and it says he's the second or third lowest stack. The average stack is 250,000.
Oh, man. Big hit.
All right, yeah, absolutely. It's a shove or go home, right?
I think so.
Although, you know, in these tournaments I've been playing, I mean, people had three big blinds, and they were calling. It's just mind-boggling.
I remember you doing that, I think.
Exactly. So I'm just saying, it was a reminder that I've progressed a little bit. Right?
Okay, yeah.
And hopefully these folks will progress eventually. Maybe they'll listen to the show. And maybe someday they'll buy in $1,000 tournaments every day like we did. Right?
Well, I'm just hoping that they're not listening to the show and doing what you're doing, and that's why they're calling it three blinds.
All right, so we're at level 14. Blinds are 2,500, 5,000 with a 500 ante. So we're well less than 10 big blinds here. We're not well less, but not
right, given if we have, let's say, if we're the seven or the eight, if we're the eight players at a table or so, our M is like four, if that's what you're wondering.
Right.
So, which is terrible.
And our hero is in the small blind with ace, king of spades, and again, he has 44,000 in chips.
Okay.
An early position player who has a stack of 250,000 raises to 12,000. A middle position player with a stack of 200,000 calls at 12,000. The chip leader with 850,000 re-raises to 38,000. And the action's now on us in the small blind.
Yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, you're not going to fold.
Well, that's why we're having a situation.
Yeah, I mean, you can't fold ace, king of spades. You know, and you're hoping that the chip leader, you know, has like a, you know, that he's just either squeezing here or he has ace, king of spades. I'm going in with it. I mean, your M is under five. You're a small stack anyway, a min cash. If you're, you know, yeah, you're going to win $1,300, but I have to roll with it and let it go and just shove.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of his thought process before we continue talking. He says, do you fold, try to get in the money, knowing that you have only four or five ante-only hands before the blinds come up next? Or do you shove your 44K, knowing that the chip leader is trying to squeeze play? He says the chip leader is a semi-aggro, and the early position player has been semi-tight aggressive. I think the initial thought is you got to get it in here, and I'm not saying that I would probably waver from that. I mean, for me, this is the kind of situation I like, is having a hand that has a lot of potential. You know, you have an ace, you have a king, they're suited, and, you know, you got straights, you flush, you got all kinds of things that could happen in this hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you got a lot of dead money in there. You've got, 24,000 plus the blinds and antes. And then the chip leader, as he said, it really does look like it's squeeze play. So there's a good chance if you call here that the other two people might fold. And if not, then you've got a huge pot. I mean, if everybody calls and it holds up, or you win, I mean, it's probably not going to hold up. You're probably going to help. That's what, four times 44, that's 250,000. That gets you back to the average stack.
Yeah, this is a great situation for us. I mean, I realize if the other guys call, then you're racing what seems to be six cards. But you got ace king suited, you know what I mean, and you're not going to fold it. You're just not going to fold it here. You're just not. I mean, I can see someone folding and making some sort of argument, but really, are you going to get a better hand in the next three or four hands and a better situation where you can quadruple your money or more? You got to get it in. I don't even second guess this at all. There's no way I fold.
All right, well, I'm going to make the second guess for you, just for the sake of the show.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, here's how I can defend folding here. And I'm not saying I will fold, for all the people out there going, I can't believe Scott folds everything. Couple things that I think are in our favor. One, we're in the small blind here. So if we fold, we've got five or six, depending what table we're at, essentially free looks at other situations. I mean, it's going to cost us 500 a pop, but we don't want the blinds coming around until then, right? Mm-hmm. When I'm a short stack, I always like being the one that's pushing rather than calling. So that's another thing to think. We've got two people that, we got an early position player that raised, another person that calls, so it's possible some of our cards are out. And if somebody has a pair, then we're going to need to hit one of those to catch, or, you know, get lucky with our spades or our straight. So it's possible that some of the cards that we need are already out. Now, of course, that means if everybody has the same cards, then we're probably in good shape since we have the better kicker. But I think all those things together, I could make a case, if you put a gun to my head, or even a squirt gun, for folding. But I think on balance, all the other stuff that's going on in here, I mean, this is an opportunity for me to... I guess the other thing, too, to remember, too, is 30 players left. We got three spots to go before I'm in cash.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I guess my ultimate thing when I wrote back to the hero is, you know, what's this $1,000 buy-in mean to you? I mean, are you a player that plays $1,000 buy-ins regularly? If that's the case, then absolutely, I'm getting it in here. I'm playing for the win. I'm with the $48,000, right? If this is a tournament you saved up for all year, I mean, I think back to the first time that we went to the World Series, right?
Yeah.
That was a huge deal for me to peel off 10 Benjamins. And again, we get this whole meta game thing about, you know, if you can't afford to buy in, and then you can't let it affect your play, blah, blah, blah. But let's be real. You know, if you put down $1,000 that you really can't afford, and you were three spots away from getting that money back, plus an extra $1,300, that's got to factor into your decision, I think.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And
if it gets one of these other two people to call, the chip leader could knock out two people. That gets you down to 29, plus you got three other tables where you might knock somebody out. It's very likely that before you get the blinds bound around, you could be in the money.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, it depends on your situation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I never enter a tournament that I can't afford, so I always enter a tournament knowing that, you know, I have to play the way I think is...
All right, let me ask you this. Go back to the World Series. I mean, you said you never entered a tournament you can't afford, but you don't buy into $1,000 tournaments every day, right?
Right.
So, not that you... I mean, I know what you mean. I mean, you could afford it. It wasn't like you told your wife, hey, we're eating ramen noodles for the next month so I can play this World Series event, right?
Right.
But that was some serious cash. So, I mean, if you got close to cashing and getting $2,300, honestly, are you telling me that that wouldn't affect your decision?
I think that Ace King of Spades hand, I would. I think I would get it in there. I think that that's a fantastic chance for me to win a bracelet. You know, mine was $1,500, and if I knew that I was going to go from 40,000 chips to a quarter million chips and be right back in it with only three tables to go, I think I would have. I think I would have gone with it. What I ended up going with at the end was King 5,
yeah.
You know, because I was first in and I did the thing that you were talking about.
Right?
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I did the thing you were talking about, trying to be the first in, but I had to settle for King 5 and got called in three places and was out. You know, whereas I would have felt much better about my situation with Ace King of Spades, knowing that this guy was probably doing a squeeze and I may end up being heads up with him with a fantastic hand. Or...
Right.
Go up four-handed and quadruple or triple or even more, quintuple my money and be a force to be reckoned with 20, you know, seven places left, you know, whatever. I don't know. I do think, though, I think I played optimally that day. I don't think I played scared. Once I got moved to another table, then I was really confident at that point, and I really just played with the tools I had rather than being scared. So I think I would have. I think I would have done what I said to do in this hand.
Yeah, and I think people that enter, I don't think too many of them play too scared. I mean, I don't think I played scared in that. But when you get to this point, I mean, there's a difference between not playing scared with 220 players in the field in level one, right?
Right.
Versus 30 players left, three away from the money. At that point, I think there's a lot of players, and I'm not criticizing them at all, and I'm probably one of them, that would probably say, you know what, I need to be a little scared here because there's a good chance that I can cash. And I'll be quite happy going home to the wife and saying, I 2.5 times my money on this tournament. by playing like a chicken shit. Chicken crap.
You're just full of... We got to get you out of Vegas, buddy.
Vegas. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my gosh. It's corrupting me. But all that being said, I mean, I'm definitely making the call here. But if somebody came to me and gave me the same reasons I just gave, I would pat him on the back and say, hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah,
but who knows? Sure. I mean, you got 3 or 4 more hands. I mean, you could get aces on the next hand. You just never know, right?
I'm not finding fault with a fold, really. I just couldn't do it myself, I don't think. I mean, I can see the reason for folding because you're going to be the button. It's only going to cost you $3,000 for your next whole round of hands. But it is short. If he's seven-handed, he's only getting a couple of hands, really, before he's got to put in some decent money again.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing, too, I was thinking about this because, I mean, obviously a lot of us have been short-stacked this entire tournament just because of at the end of it. You know, the little adage is when you got 10 big blinds, you got to shove it in, right?
Yeah.
Which is perfect. I understand it. But I think you also forget that the standard raise was 3x.
Right.
Right? So just because you had 10 big blinds, I mean, you still got some leverage even if you're raising 4 or 5x, not just 10. I mean, it's a lot tougher for somebody to call your 10x, obviously, and that's why you start shoving at that point. But you know if you go a couple more hands and you get down to 40,000, I mean, you still got 8x. I mean, that's still a significant raise.
No, yeah, so, I know you're right. You know, I it's just when I try to look at tournaments from an M perspective and from what's the likelihood I'm going to be dealt a better hand than this and have a better situation for my money. If they both call me behind me, I'm gonna get 5 times my money.
Exactly.
If I win, and so yeah, that's the thing I look at. I know what you're saying, and I can see somebody folding here and saying, look, I'm going to have the button next hand. I'm going to have a few chances to probably be the first one in. Maybe I'll do that. And that's what I did in the World Series when I was devastated when my jacks lost to fives.
Yeah.
And I was crippled. So that was the thing. I at that point, I was like, okay, I got to pick a hand now, and I wanted to be the first in, and I did that. But in this situation, you know, I was hoping that someone would call me and have a worse hand, or I would hit one of my 60-30s or something and double up and whatever. This guy's got ace-king suited, and he's got somebody who appears to be squeezing. You know, I love his situation, and I know it's hand of the week, situation of the week, and we're going to end up losing probably. But I love the situation, and I'm shoving.
All right, just for giggles, if you had 7-6 of spades, what do you do here?
Oh, I let it go.
Okay.
Yeah, I let it go. That's not a hand that I would.
So it's not. This is not a ship equity kind of thing here.
No, to me, I mean, it is. It, that's in the back of my mind with the ace king, but with 6-7, I know I'm behind. At least ace king, I have a chance to. Even if they have queens, it's 50-50. You know, only kings and aces are the only hands I'm afraid of, and I have a feeling that I have a legitimate chance of knocking these other two guys out of this hand and being heads up with the chip leader and doubling through him or doubling up or whatever you want to call it. So, No, I'm not going with just any two that are decent. I mean, ace king of spades is like the nuts to me at that point.
Right. Okay. All right. So our hero does decide to push. The big blind wakes up and calls 44K. How do people fall asleep at the table with 3 from the money?
And it's so cold in Vegas.
It's mind-boggling. Well, we don't know where this is.
Oh, we don't know this is in Vegas, yeah, though. I'm getting on that World Series. We were talking about the World Series a lot, so maybe think that, but yeah.
Sir, it's on you. Oh, what is it I call? It's 44,000. Nope! The early position person, or early position player, calls as well. The middle position folds, and we have 4 to the flop.
Oof.
Which is the deuce of clubs, the tray of clubs, the 5 of spades. The big blind pushes 150,000. Middle position folds, and the chip leader instant calls. The big blind turns over queen-queen, just as you said.
Yeah.
You know, you got outs to him. The chip leader shows 3-6 of diamonds for the flop straight.
I think it's 4-6 of diamonds.
That would be right, yes. Yeah, 3-6 would not work.
Yeah, 3-6 is a pair of threes.
Board runs out, 9 of hearts, jack of spades. And as it turns out, the 30th player busts from another table. The chip leader rakes in 330,000 K pot. And presumably we are out with nothing to show for it than a great story about whether we should have shoved with ace-king or not.
So it didn't matter. If we'd gotten heads up with the chip leader, we'd have lost anyway, so... But I think that situation calls for a shove. I really do.
All right, Brian/Fisk, thank you for sending your hand of the week, and we encourage everyone else to send your hands of the week to podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and we'll send you something great, like we're going to send Brian/Fisk a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store.
All right, buddy, we'll have a good rest of the week. Make that Annie Up Poker Tour successful. Anybody listening to the show today, if you're doing it on a Thursday or a Friday, get out there and play the main event.
Plenty of time. Still got good satellites.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.